My words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlines. Its dissenters are silent, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program. For from that scrutiny comes understanding. That understanding comes support or opposition, and both of them. Asking the newspapers to support the administration. But I am asking your help for a tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. consultants. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. As a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors. We expect you to point them out and admit them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. That is why our press was protected by the first amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not primarily to amuse and entertain, not to emphasize the trivial, simply give the public what it wants. It's wrong, it's allowed, it's state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crisis and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger public opinion. This means greater coverage and analysis of international news, for it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. It means greater attention to improved understanding of the news, as well as improved transmission. And it means, finally, that government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security. And so it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
I remember over the years meeting with politicians, meeting with corporate executives, and they'd say, off record, Alex, you're a journalist, this is off record. Alex, the public want to be slaves. They're stupid and dumb. They don't need resources. We're going to lower the standard of living, but raise the third world to parity, and this is just fair. Well, that's not even what the globalists are actually doing. They tell these mid-level executives that think they're high-level, oh, you're going to be on the winning team. You're going to be part of the big managing elite. Yes. And we're going to raise the third world and lower the first world. And that's what they tell the third world. Oh, be for NAFTA, be for GATT, be for the Copenhagen Carbon Tax Treaty. Until the third world in December actually got the treaty, they wouldn't ever release it a week into the two-week summit. Finally, it got released by the Danish, by the Danes, and the third world said, no way. We've got to make right at double the cuts you do in taxes. This was supposed to be looting the rich gringos in America. Yeah, right. Oh, we're going to get looted here, too. Don't worry. But you're going to get double looted. I mean, what has the IMF and World Bank done to Latin America? What has it done to Africa? Everyone knows who they are there. Everyone knows. They come loan you $1 billion. 30 years later, you've paid 50-plus billion, and you still owe another 50 billion. You will never pay it back. You're not meant to pay it back because the IMF only lets you invest it in things that will fail. It's simple. Look, if you want to understand everything, go to Encyclopedia Britannica. In fact, guys, print me the Encyclopedia breakdown of sharecropping. I mean, I'll give you my historical definition from research. Then we'll read the technical definition. But if you want to know what sharecropping is, I'll break it down. Feudalism became illegal in the last 300 to 500, depending on what country, years in England, in Spain, in Portugal, in France, in the Netherlands. In fact, the Netherlands was one of the first places to really become free, along with Switzerland, with the model of freedom. Then it got taken back over by German royalty. But side issue, I'm digressing. And sharecropping, simple. You live on someone else's land, and they set it up where you plant the crops, harvest them, bring them to market, and then you get maybe 20% of the money. But it's all designed with fines and fees and rules and regulations. And most sharecroppers had to sign an agreement that they would only spend their money with the company store. So if anybody wants to know what our economy is, it's a sharecropper economy. Very elementary. This isn't communism. It's not socialism. It's not fascism. Though there's elements of all of those isms. Those are all fake. Those don't exist. Those are just a tapestry hung out, another curtain, a facade, a painted background, like a painted Hollywood set. You know, John Wayne and Stagecoach really isn't out there in Arizona. No, he's on a soundstage, and they got fake tumbleweeds blowing by, and there's mountains painted in the background. It isn't real, folks. So our economy is being converted from a wildcat, laissez-faire beauty, which really turns the human spirit loose, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and punishes mistakes and rewards daring and ingenuity and inventiveness, the rugged individualism. And it's not perfect, but let me tell you, it's better than anything else. It's better than bondage. Because all there really is in this world is freedom and bondage, and where are you on that spectrum? It isn't left, it isn't right, it isn't black, it isn't white, it isn't Mexican-American, it isn't Chinese-Russian, it isn't German-French, it isn't British-Irish. It's El Jefe, strongman, dictator groups, and all their different flavors. It'd be kind of like if Jim Jones got up there and said, I got 20 flavors of Kool-Aid here for you. We got grape. We got strawberry. We got raspberry. We've got it all. We've got apple. We've got orange. We've got cherry. We've got pineapple. We've got blackberry. We've got whatever you want, but it's all the same thing. Some sugar, some dye, some flavoring, and he spiked it with a deadly poison, cyanide. And so I sit here watching the idiot public gulp down different flavors of the same crud that came from the same factory run by the same people. The feds fund the white supremacists. They fund the Mexican supremacists. They fund and push the black supremacists in every case. So we're all fighting with each other. They fund the Democrats. They fund the Republicans. So we're all fighting with each other. They fund the major environmental groups to make sure there's never a real environmental movement that actually challenges some of the serious problems. And so it's sharecropping. Here it is. Sharecropping is a system of agriculture in which a landowner allows a tenant to use the land in return for a share of the crop produced on the land. This should not be confused with crop fixed rent contract, in which the landowner allows a tenant to use the land in return for a fixed amount of crop per unit of land. Sharecropping has a long history, and there was a wide range of different situations and types of agreements that have encompassed the system. Some are governed by tradition, others by law, legal contract systems such as the Italian system and French system and Spanish system occur widely. Islamic law contains a tradition that sharecropping agreement for the cultivation of orchards. But when you look at the fraudulent model of sharecropping, that's what this is. It's feudalism. It's a form of slavery where you don't even have to feed your slaves. All right, we're going to come back and just get into all of it. A trillion is not enough, as I told you. They want more now. That's how this works. Stay with us. Max Keiser, inventor of the Hollywood Stock Exchange System. Max Keiser, inventor of the Hollywood Stock Exchange.
And Good morning, CKLM listeners. It is Monday, May 17th, 2010. You are listening to CKLN Rude Awakening with your host, Rude Boy Black Krishna, here on Mondays, Tuesdays, now Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Monday through Thursday from 6 to 7 a.m. here on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947. You can catch this show where, again, it is called Rude Awakening. That wasn't my name for it. I'm inheriting the responsibility for this news time slot at this community radio station at the moment, and privileged to do so, and happy to do so, and happy to have added a fourth day before the G20 summit, and to have a chance to speak on those things on behalf of Toronto and the power structure, and started off the show with a song today that's in the process of being mixed. The instrumental is produced by trance producer PFM. And it's called You Will Let Go of My Mind. And because I do see a lot of mind control out there. I hate to, you know, say that, but I see tons and tons of mind control out there. I'm not victimized by it. I'm just saying, like, what am I supposed to do? Ignore it? Like, so I'm at a party. It's a half yuppie, half pagan party on Saturday. The numbers of each weren't strong enough, and there was a weird crossover thing, barbecue to the night thing. But it was a good party. I mean, you know, booze and food and nice people by and large. But I'm noticing, because I'm trying to notice things, that people are getting a little bit more more paranoid about what they say and worried about being judged. And we have this sort of snitch culture where we're supposed to go, did you just say that? I knew you were scum. And this is again on a subtle level. Now if you look. You know, if your girlfriend changed your hair color, or your boyfriend for that matter, these days everybody's going crazy. So if they change their hair color, and you don't notice, you know, you're not necessarily a jerk. But if someone tells you, hey, take a look at their hair when they come in, see what you think, then you'll notice, you know, the highlights and so on, or whatever the hell they did. And so what you'll notice is that obviously there's this category of information that we all shouldn't talk about. You know, this the new world order and related things and things that are serious and so on in the big sense. And then there's subcategories, you know, for each individual group. And of course, if you're not with the people you usually talk to, then there's always a danger of you saying something that could set someone off, or them saying something that could set you off, and so on and so forth. And so you know, it's not an indictment of anybody. You Will Let Go of My Mind is something I think that all of us can say, because we know at this point that there are things that we have to do for the future to make sure that the powers that be evil, the establishment, the big corporations don't, you know, turn our governments loose on us. But Max Kaiser, financial analyst from the Alex Jones Show, says financial firms have no costs and big fake profits. And he's always a fun guy to start the show with, an energetic bundle of energy. He makes finance fun. Mr. Kaiser from the Alex Jones Show.
Kaiser, inventor of the Hollywood Stock Exchange System, a successful broker, author, television host on BBC, Al Jazeera, RT, Press TV, the list goes on and on. He is now here with us to discuss all of this. Max Kaiser, good to have you with us.
Good to be back, Alex Jones. And let's remember May 6th, 2010, a day that will live in infamy. This was the first unequivocal domestic financial attack in America. Financial terrorist attack, unequivocal, domestic, first of its kind in America.
Break down that. Break down who are the terrorists, how they did it.
Well, in Washington, there was a bill circulating to break up the too-big-to-fail banks. Of course, the banks don't want to break up their monopolies. So they used weapons of mass financial destruction. They destroyed 1,000 points, $1 trillion worth of equity on the market. When it looked like the coast was clear and Congress decided that they were not going to vote for anything that would break up the banks, then they allowed the markets to come back, and they rewarded the Congress people, who, of course, own a lot of stocks and bank stocks themselves. So they put a gun to the head of Congress and say, do what we want you to do, or we crash this market. We crashed the country's net worth. We crashed your net worth. Hank Paulson did it in the end in October of 2008, the same kind of thing. They crashed the market. They did it again. This was more obvious, though. This 1,000-point drop that only took 15 minutes, this was unequivocal. Now, this is quite remarkable. Basically, if you want to know the mechanics of it, I can walk you through it.
Yeah, let's walk through the mechanics of it. And then we have all these internal emails of Goldman Sachs where they're involved in other financial terror. We know this is their policy. We know Paulson went in and said there will be martial law if you don't give us these trillions of dollars in October of 2008 when the Congress wouldn't do it. They went out on TV. The New York Fed head, the Fed chairman, the Treasury secretary, all Goldman Sachs alumni, and they came out and they said we are going to have a depression. And so they used fear to have the public pull out and drive it down this time. And that's what the other experts are saying. This was not a fat finger. They admit this was not a mistake. This was insider using the plunge protection team to artificially drive down the market. Physical financial terrorism, not just using, you know, bad mouthing like the head of the Rothschilds did by claiming that Napoleon had won at Waterloo, which was a lie. That's similar to what happened in 2008. You're saying this was done physically in there. Let's go over the mechanics of this.
All right. So on the New York Stock Exchange, there are tens of millions, hundreds of millions of shares that trade daily, and 70% of that is conducted by computers. So computers are trading effectively with themselves back and forth over these computer networks. Now, for the most part, the trading is somewhat benign. But the key concept here to understand is that because 70% of it are computer-to-computer trading, the ability to what's called discover prices, the price discovery mechanism, can be pulled away from the floor of the exchange, and it can be recreated with the computers trading with themselves. So in other words, if you want to move the price of the stock up or down and you control 70% of the volume, you have the ability to nudge prices up or down by simply increasing the number of buys over sales, sells that you're making from computer to computer. If you want the prices to go down, you increase the number of sells to buys from computer to computer. The cost is zero because the cost of borrowing money for Wall Street is zero. The cost of transacting is zero. And it doesn't cost them anything to engage in this. That's one of the reasons why interest rates keep them are near zero, is because you have to be able to conduct this type of thing without having any cost. Now, the second step is when you get the price of a security, like an S&P futures contract or an S&P security, which is based on the entire market, you know, it's a proxy for the entire market, it's a price signal. And this price signal triggers a response from those hundreds of thousands of day traders out there who then do your dirty work for you. So when the price trigger is established, let's say you can move the price up 2 or 3%, and it pops up on everyone's Bloomberg machine, and every day trader in the world sees, oh, my gosh, there's a 2% move. Suddenly the trend momentum players and these mom-and-poppers and these day traders glom in there with their day trade money, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So then they pick up the ball, they run with it, and they make these things, exaggerate them to these unbelievable extremes now. And so they outsource the manipulation to the day trader, effectively what it boils down to. And, of course, this gives them a great way to cover their tracks because they can say, well, you know, we didn't. It wasn't us. It was those day traders out there. It was the market. It wasn't us. Meanwhile, once the deed is done, in this case, with Congress acquiesced, and they decided not to pursue anything to bail out the big banks, then they simply remove the sell orders. There's a price vacuum on the buy side. It triggers a price signal for the day traders then to come in to hide their tracks. The buying orders come in, and effectively they refill the pinata. That's what that rally was about at the end of the day Thursday, is refilling the pinata so that next week, if Congress decides to come again and say, you know what, we want to break you guys up, we want to attack, we want to get rid of high-frequency trading, they can just do the same thing over again. This is just now blatant. It's easy. It's costless. It's very effective.
And we're back, CKLN listeners. Again, that was Max Kaiser from the Alex Jones Show from the 10th of May, 2010. I wanted to play that clip for a very important reason, just the use of trends in our culture to control our thinking and to control our herd mentality by the New World Order. For those of you folks out there who don't know, the New World Order is essentially a system of rich people worldwide working together. At this point, they're working together. They're agreeing to things like, yeah, let's have these 20 countries at the G20 summit, you know, run the world. Obviously those countries are being sold to us heavily as running the world. But we do know that with every election, there's corruption, there's fraud, and there are large corporations that basically buy votes. And so basically the international offshore corporations of the world who have no loyalty to any countries, no loyalty to any places where they live. They only have loyalty to their bottom line, their stock prices and their dividends and their earnings and profits and so on. These companies are using these 20 countries to manage the next stage of our de-evolution into global government. And you can see that, and I'll try this right now, and I'll Google New World Order, and I'm in Google, and if I go to even more, it's one of these things. All right, so I got to go to Google News first, and New World Order, and all right, here we go. Before It's News, New World Order currency crisis, and that's from Before It's News. And then from the San Francisco Chronicle. Okay, so this is a major mainstream publication. A Chaotic New World Order from May 14th, 2010. And I'm just reading the little bylines here from if you go to google.com and you type something into news, it gives you all the selections. Here we go. Those under 30 are more conditioned to the New World Order in TV land. They are less annoyed by intrusive show promos eating up the bottom of the TV screen. See? So they just slip in the New World Order. This is the way things are now. This is the way things are now. This is what they're saying. This is the New World Order. And they make it seem like it's natural as opposed to managed, which is something that we have to get around here. Google Book Editions and a, quote, New World Order in Book Publishing. And this is from Publishers Weekly. Again, a mainstream publication here from May 5th. But it was Schnittman's evocation of a, quote, New World Order in Book Publishing that illustrated the magnitude of change as he outlined the strength. So now they're talking about this. And I read the Yahoo NBA, I have a Yahoo account, and sometimes I click out of there, and then I'll click on the NBA news, because I'm an NBA basketball fan, although I haven't watched as much recently, and I'm not keeping up in the playoffs as much as I'd like to, because a number of other things to deal with. But regardless, I heard a mainstream, or read rather, a mainstream, you know, Yahoo NBA sports article by Adrian Wojnarowski, I think, where he casually referred to Jay-Z, the rapper, and LeBron James in Cleveland creating a new world order of entertainment and basketball if LeBron James leaves Cleveland and bolts for, not New Jersey, but Brooklyn, where the Nets are moving to in the next couple of years. And so again, it just casually slipped in there, sometimes by people who know, and they're just sort of letting it out, and they know it's their job to normalize it, so they'll slip it in. Sometimes by people who don't. And it's a term that's been around for some time. Noam Chomsky's written a book called, A Reader in the New World Order or something. He didn't get into the, and most academics avoid the secret society aspects, and most activists avoid the financial and banking aspects. And so, you know, they're led away from the central organizing principles of the New World Order. One is secret societies and keeping secrets. And they get power by keeping secrets. We, the people, get power by exposing them. Because if we know we're scammed, and if we know that it's a fraudulent fiat money system that's being destroyed right now, and it's not a natural thing for all of us to go broke, and they'll keep selling us this. They keep saying the recession's natural and climate change is man-made. And as often as I can here on the radio without being too redundant, I say it's the exact opposite. The recession is man-made and climate change is natural. So let's worry about the man-made stuff, including the recession, and see who is behind it. Facebook privacy, secrets unveiled from PC world. Everyone's taking shots at Facebook these days while they can, because they should. Facebook is doing horrible things with our privacy. They're saying, look, now we have to make more money off this site. And so we have to abuse your privacy privileges. that we gave you as part of this social networking thing. So we get basically, it's almost like a bar changing the rules on you, doubling the drink prices, you know. It's like y'all show up at a bar, you get together, it's your birthday, all your friends are there, and then the bartender goes, yeah, instead of $6 a beer, it's going to be $12 a beer. And you guys all have to stay here because you came from far and there's no other place near here and nobody else knows where else to go, and you're just going to take it and like it. And so Facebook is pulling those kind of stunts recently, which is worth worth checking out, keeping an eye on. Another article here from the CBC.ca, a new world order at World Cup. And this is from the CBC.ca blog from April 24, 2010. And it's posted by Nigel Reed. So Spain is going to win the World Cup, right? Well, surely they will make the final in South Africa. Worst case scenario, Spain gets knocked out in the semis. We're talking about the number one ranked team in the world here. We're also talking about a team which in the modern era has never progressed beyond the quarterfinals. Over the course of 76 years, Spain has precious little to show for its 12 World Cup appearances. And on and on and on. And yet the title of this article from, again, April 24, 2010, cbc.ca/sports/soccer, blah, 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 World Cup, posted by Nigel Reed, a new world order at World Cup. Now, why would they use that term? Why would why would these people use the term new world order? It sounds kind of ominous in many ways. And so, that seems on its face suspect. But again, the powers that be evil are trying to get us to endorse all the changes that they're behind. They basically, in their minds, in their warped way of thinking, we can't manage ourselves. You know, we're the herd. We are the herd, and so we don't have the ability to manage ourselves. And that's something that they've been preaching for some time now. And so to break that down a bit and just let you know, I got a constitutional scholar here named Michael Badnarik. He recently suffered a heart attack, and so tragic that. But he can explain how everywhere is a free speech zone, and how constitutions give people rights and give the government privileges, and that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to limit the power of the government, and frankly, the government's supposed to protect the people from the corporations. But I'm on the TVC on Saturday, heading towards me old shindiggery. And I'm looking at an ad there, and it's Immigration Canada. And beside the Immigration Canada Canadian government logo was a Gap logo. The Gap, like literally the clothing retailer, the worldwide clothing retail, The Gap. And so you have The Gap and Immigration Canada working together. Now, one would hope that even if we have a system of rich people and people who will do anything for money and so on, one would hope that we'd have our government there to protect them. So if a corporation screws us or poisons us and doesn't want to pay us, then we can petition the government. The government could say, corporation, you shouldn't do that. And if we screw a corporation, we rob from them. If we're an employee there and we commit massive fraud and siphon away money, the government can step in as a sort of, semi-independent referee chosen by the people at large, by the body politic, to referee any disputes in the public. But what happens when governments and corporations merge together, and you can see this everywhere. You can see this in advertising all over this city of Toronto as I broadcast from here at Ryerson University in Toronto, Canada. You can see this also going around worldwide, though, where governments and corporations are merging together and working together. Mussolini, noted Italian dictator in the 1930s, called this corporatism, and he also called this fascism. And it's generally recognized by people on the left and the right and academics as being fascism when there is no safeguard against the power brokers in your society, when they, in fact, work carefully with the state, who has a monopoly on force and a monopoly on power. And so they're trying to sell us this idea as being inevitable, and they are selling us fascism almost mentally. And you can notice all sorts of things. I'm even noticing the predominance of H&M, the clothing retailer, and how, there's a bunch of ads up there saying, H&M, this top, only $5.95, this sweater, $14.95. And I'm thinking, wow, there's this crazy clothing retailer, and they just blew up everywhere. They took over Dundas Square, they took over the advertising, and they're just expanding like crazy. And they're listing Walmart prices while pimping themselves as being the ultimate in fashion. So why are they doing that? Well, Plato coined the term the fashion industry like 2,500 years ago. Plato, philosopher from history. We all live in Plato's cave. We're staring at the shadows. We can't see the exit. We can't really see the light. and that's where he says most of humanity is. Well, he coined the term the fashion industry, and I have a feeling they're trying to keep fashion really cost-conscious so that as they make us all poor, and as Alan Watts says, they want to make us happy and poor, they make sure we can stay fashionable. But Michael Badnarik on free speech and our rights.
Information with the new Supreme Court nominee, with public statements and white papers calling for the end of the Second Amendment, arrest whoever they want, legislation racing through to do it. I mean, this is Mao Zedong level.
It is. It is terrifying. I travel a lot, and I don't have much time to watch television. I only found out that we had a new nominee for the Supreme Court when I was at the bus station waiting for the bus to arrive, and It is. It's terrifying the way they are stacking the Supreme Court with people who don't recognize the difference between rights and privileges.
Well, I mean, as a constitutional scholar who packs hotel ballrooms with seminars on the Constitution, break down the constitutional violations when you have a government with legislation openly saying we can keep you safe, but we need to be able to secretly arrest citizens with no trial and strip them of their citizenship and give them enhanced interrogation, i.e. torture.
Well, the quickest way to do this is to ask why we have any government at all. Do we want complete lack of government, anarchy? Well, most people don't want that. So why would the Founding Fathers create any government at all? Well, to protect the life, liberty, and private property that we already had. Any government that's going to be legitimate is going to protect your property. Any government that is violating your life, liberty, or property is illegitimate. The purpose of the Constitution was to establish limitations on government power. And, yeah, the government is bad, but the Americans who live here need to understand the difference between rights and privileges. They need to understand the Constitution. They need to understand that we are the source of all political power, and that the government works for us. Anywhere I happen to be standing is a free speech zone. We don't have free speech zones in the United States. This is ridiculous. And any Supreme Court justice that is written to violate or limit your freedom of speech is certainly not a constitutionalist and should never be on the Supreme Court.
And we're back, CKLM listeners. Again, that was Michael Badnarik, constitutional scholar, lawyer, professor, author, talking about free speech zones and talking about our rights and what's happening what should be happening and what is happening with respect to all this. Now, on that note, I did have the chance to look at an article in the Globe and Mail by Siri Agrell, courtesy of something sent through to the Toronto Truth Seekers listserv by Mr. Dan Dix, because he and his Press for Truth colleagues were the subject of that article. Since Mr. Badnarik just brought up... free speech, why don't we take a look at what's happening with free speech here in Canada? And again, this is an article from the Globe and Mail from Sunday, May 16th, 2010 at 3:23 p.m. called Can I See Some ID? And shout-outs to the Globe for covering this. It's in their blog section, I think, so I don't know if it'll make the paper, but it's certainly online for people to take a look at here. Can I See Some ID? And the article starts, a video has been circulating online, and in quotes, and to police, of a guy with Press for Truth getting, quote, arrested in the business district after shooting some footage for their G20 coverage. The bearded guy, Dan Dixon, and that's a sick in a little hard, you know, square parentheses there, S-I-C, which I think means you spelled it wrong. But it's not Dan Dixon, it's Dan Dix, so hopefully the Globe corrects that at some point online here. But anyway, the bearded guy, Dan Dix, has been at a few events I've been covering. Another one of his contributors was shooting footage downtown when he was asked for ID by building security and then detained by police when he refused to hand it over. Some see this video as evidence that Toronto is being transformed into a police state in the lead-up to the G20. Others, like the security guard in the video, point out that there's a heightened risk that needs to be acknowledged, especially if you're hanging out around the main venues and refuse to explain why. I recently shot a video with a Globe videographer in some of the same locations visited by Press for Truth. We were asked what we were doing, too, and identified ourselves as journalists with the Globe and Mail. That was the end of the story, and we were allowed to carry on doing our work. The guy in the video says he, quote, works independently, unquote. It's accurate, but maybe if he had simply named the website he is collecting footage for, the situation could have been avoided. Journalists from around the world will descend on Toronto for the G20, and not all of them will work for the so-called mainstream media. I asked Megan Gray of the Integrated Security Unit how, quote, indie media representatives should identify themselves when covering the event. Quote, I would recommend that they carry some kind of work ID with them, whether it's photo identification for their own business card, regardless of what outlet they're working for, she said. Quote, if they've got business cards or anything with the name of their organization, that would be helpful. And it says at the bottom, media accreditation is being done through the Summit Management Office. Questions about accreditation can be sent to G8-G20 Media Accreditation at international.gc.ca. And so, you know, people often wonder, well, what can you do about this? You know, how do you, you know, what are you supposed to do about this? Well, for one thing is that Press for Truth, having been in a public area and, you know, without any sort of reasonable suspicion, having been bugged for their ID just for filming in public, they are, you know, not taking this lightly. And then on behalf of Canadians, they are considering, last I checked, legal action. Dan also sent this through to a listserv of 365 people, and I think about 200 something around that actual listserv was 365, a part of the TorontoTruthSeekers.com group and meetup, and so he asked us to post comments. So I decided I'd post a comment because me speaking to English good, at least sometimes when I try hard, and so I thought, what the hell? Let me chip in my 2 cents here. To kind of break this down. All right, so here's my comment on the Globe article. PressForTruth.ca has their explanation written by Dan Dix, the owner of the local PFT independent media organization. You can read it here. And yeah, that's right, you can go to PressForTruth.ca and you can see Press for Truth arrested while covering G20 Summit, and you can read their article on this, which I broke down on a recent show here at CKLN Radio. Back to my comment here. While the Globe sensibly chose to identify themselves immediately, PFT wisely chose to challenge the idea of Canadians being asked for their ID for filming in public in Canada. Some would say it's even necessary to do it this time when many Canadians feel our governments are overstepping their bounds by curtailing our rights to try to keep us safe. We need to support the brave Canadians who do this. Before the G20 summit happens from June 26th to 27th, all Canadians should ask if we're okay with our authorities suddenly taking away our right to avoid being hassled for ID by security guards or police without probable cause. Yes, there is a, quote, heightened risk, unquote, due to the summit. But that could be taken care of without Canadians being treated like a, quote, suspect unless real, quote, probable cause can be shown to exist. Now, if somebody really doesn't want us to see something, they should put it inside. If it's outside, we should be able to film it in public. That only makes sense. We've had decades of locals, tourists, weddings, picnics, and more with many people filming in public. We have very little history of any danger posed by those people. If there is a danger, now there's cops and cameras everywhere to spot it. There are specific legal arguments to be cited for sure, but a common sense populist principle is worth aiming for as well. Regards, VJ, and then in brackets below, a.k.a. BK, host of CKLN 88.1 Rude Awakening, new show, Monday to Thursday, 6 to 7 a.m. And in the modern thumbs-up, thumbs-down speak of Facebook and YouTube and other places, I have 11 thumbs up and 2 thumbs downs. So, what does this mean? Is this going to stop the New World Order dead in its tracks, shut down a, you know, 10,000-year-old Babylonian conspiracy? No. But, it will give people something to think about. Although I do have a friend who's very, very, well, put it this way, he's pro-establishment, you know, whether he won't say that, but all of his arguments are, so, you know. And so the first thing he said to me after reading this was, so, you don't believe media accreditation? I was just like, no, that's not what I'm saying. And you can't make what I said into that. Not around me, anyway. In your own head, you can do whatever you want, whatever I said, whatever. But if you actually want the truth about what I mean about this, then you can bring that up. But that's not inferred by me in what I wrote. And if you infer that from where you're coming from, well, that's your thing, but it's not my doing. So, in answer to that question, because it may be out there, I'm not against media accreditation. If I have a say for example, and I do work on music and other things, and say I have a press conference or a you know something for something I'm promoting, and you know it's a very specific event, and if any media shows up, I want to make sure the media covers it. I would have media accreditation there, or if it's a press-only event, you know, a small venue or, you know, for whatever reason, it's a press-only event. I would have media accreditation there for sure. There's no doubt about that. But that would be to make sure they were, you know, seated well, in the front, they could take pictures, you know, they were given access to key people, you know, around me. I'll have to do this for my mayor campaign, which I've been kind of quiet about, but you'll hear why in a second. But I'm not against media accreditation. So that's not the issue. And there's certain times and places where it's warranted. But what I'm against, as I said in my comment, is the idea of security guards or police bugging us for filming in public at, you know, random times as determined by, you know, the government saying, yeah, now we can do this. Now we can just say, oh, you're filming in public. Well, you know, let's see some ID. Who are you? What are you doing? And it's just like, I'm filming in public. Bugger off. Like, there's nothing in public that I shouldn't be able to just chill out, film, relax, people taking pictures of their cameras, Facebook, whatever. You know, you can't just suddenly think we're all, you know, suspected terrorists and intimidate us by bothering us. Now, if we're doing something, if we are, you know, filming, you know, something that looks like it could be super, you know, terroristy to whatever film, then maybe. You know what I mean? But it's again, that the list of those things is too few and far between. If you're at Trinity Bellwoods Park and they say, yeah, you know, we're using this as a protest zone for the G20, so what are you doing filming here? It's like, it's Trinity friggin' Bellwoods Park, you know? There's a wedding party over there taking pictures. Like, bugger off, you know? You can't just suddenly, like, what did you do to this park to make it unfilmable? Did you stick a bunch of little cameras and microphones everywhere? Well, if so, I sure as hell want to film that. So, the idea of just sort of, you know, kowtowing for security every time security says, security, we need to do this, is something that we definitely have to challenge. And this gets back to our relationship with the government. And on this show, I'm breaking a bit of that down, as well as mind control. I did start off the show with mind control. This is mind control. Mind control is the establishment repeating, especially since 9/11. Back in 2001, almost 9 years ago. If you don't know it's an inside job, folks, you have to. You have to learn. Some people I know believe in the 9/11 myth as almost a religious, you know, thing where they think they tie it to their faith in the mainstream media and this culture and this society or whatever. I got friends from different religions who swear by the 9/11 myth because, you know, a lot of the people that they look up to promote it. And we just have to realize that the leaders of most social groups, you know, as Alex Jones talked about in the opening clip about sharecropping, you know, he says, you know, they're controlled by the New World Order. The leaders of the groups that keep us fighting, the leaders of the groups that keep us aiming at other groups, the leaders of the groups that keep us begging the government to do more, and yet every time they do more, we're even more screwed. You know, all the black leaders have done that, the brown leaders have done that, the Hispanic leaders have done that, the Asian leaders have done that, the white leaders have done that. You know, all these people were working, you know, whether they knew it or not, for the New World Order, and they were part of an establishment activist power structure, where they basically said, you know what, we're gonna take foundation money from foundations that are funded by the richest people in the world, Ford Foundation, Carnegie Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and in exchange for taking that funding money to fund us, we're going to develop a certain type of activism that will get some things done, but will allow conditions overall for all of us to get worse, and will only empower the people behind the foundations to increase their control over us. So Michael Badnarik, again, constitutional lawyer, scholar, is going to break down a bit of what constitutions are supposed to be for, including our Charter of Rights and Freedoms here in Canada, which these principles should apply to.
My rights are not predicated on your being comfortable with it. So in a democracy, you can vote on anything. You can vote to take somebody else's property away. You can vote to limit somebody else's freedom of speech. We live in a republic. I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. A republic is based on law. One person and the right of private property will supersede a unanimous vote. In a republic, the minority is protected from an overbearing majority. So the major difference for you to know is that in a democracy, you can vote on anything, and in a republic, there are many, many things that you're not allowed to vote on. Now, the Ninth and Tenth Amendments are very important. They actually work together. The Ninth Amendment, without repeating it, says that because we have a Bill of Rights, that's not a complete list. The Bill of Rights doesn't say anything about your right to have children, but you clearly have a right to have children. The Bill of Rights says nothing about your right to travel, but you have a right to travel. So the Ninth Amendment explicitly says that the Bill of Rights is not a comprehensive list. There are things that you can do by right which are not listed in the Bill of Rights. On the contrary, the Tenth Amendment explicitly says that the government is not allowed to do things unless the Constitution explicitly allows it. We the people have rights. We give the government privileges, and those privileges for the government are listed in Article 1, Section 8. Anything that the government is doing not explicitly listed in Article 1, Section 8 is, by definition, unconstitutional.
And all powers that are not listed in the Tenth Amendment, there's only three of them, are reserved to the states or the people. And the Ninth Amendment, as you said, clearly states, you know, every common right of a free creature. We've got it all, and the federal government can't touch it. But now the feds are saying they want to push a one-child policy here because it's not expressly enumerated. But when it is enumerated under the First Amendment, how can you have someone who's going to be the Supreme Court justice say, I'm going to arrest you for your speech? What a piece of trash. What a tyrant. What an enemy of anyone that loves freedom.
And that's right, folks. There are enemies of freedom out there who we do pay attention to. Michael Badnarik on the Alex Jones Show from the 11th of May, breaking down a bit of what constitutions are supposed to do. And yet we can flex against this in our culture. There's no doubt. On Saturday, just at a Toronto Truth Seekers meetup again. Although I have to be honest with you, that's what I do on here on the show, and I take a lot of heat for it, no matter where I go. But after some internal turmoil at TTS, a lot of it based on the fact that I believe that we need to do something to feel like we're worth something and to get anything done about this whole New World Order problem, I'm afraid that we're defaulting to our worst instincts as a result of a backlash against that. And you had basically 10 people, and you know, there's another 3 or 4 on the outside, but 10 people in a circle talking to each other while ignoring the other 10,000 walking by around them. And talking, and a lot of it's about religion, and because it's about religion, they think it's important. But again, if there's no fruits of your labor, it's not that important. So the New World Order and mind control is going to make is going to sell us the New Age idea of just try and keep it happy, just try and feel special. You are gods on earth, and even if you don't think you're a god on earth, if you act like you think you're a god on earth, by just, you know, talking, you know, like you know, that's enough, then it's the same thing. So, in a nutshell, the New Age movement has recycled Hinduism. What does that mean? It means the people saw how India has 1 billion people and 800 million poor people, and how they basically used Hinduism to teach people to just think of themselves, don't talk bad things because you'll get bad karma. You know, don't look at that poor person over there, you'll get their bad karma. There's a circle of death, rebirth, and life, and everything just happens by ordain. So if you were born poor, then, you know, that's just the way things are supposed to be, because God wouldn't make an imperfect world, and blah, 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 blah. All this other nonsense. And there's good things about Hinduism. There's good things about all religions, but there's nonsense about them all, too. And that nonsense is often exploited. And so about in the late 1800s, Madame Helena Blavatsky, a Eastern Star Freemason, a member of the Female Freemasonry Group, along with other, you know, top Freemasons at the time, you know, worked together. Alice Bailey and others at that time worked on promoting the New Age through books, through the Lucifer Trust, which became the Lucius Trust. And for the last 130 years or so, they've really been pushing that idea. It got hot in the 70s and the smiley face and yoga and transcendental meditation. The Beatles brought that over in the 60s. And so they've been slow roasting us in this New Age pressure cooker for some time now. And so I can see those effects out there. You know, like I, you know, once you know what it is, you know, then it's possible for you to see it. And when you see the kind of world they're trying to create today, They're trying to create a world where no matter what we do or don't do, we're supposed to be happy, and we're supposed to make each other happy, and we're supposed to be worried about not making each other happy. And it makes conversations incredibly unnatural, and it makes people incredibly fragile, because you're so scared of being unhappy yourself that you're scared of what other people will say, what other people will do, you know, what something sounds like. And then you're so into just being happy and into feeling special that you'll do that without accomplishing anything. And then, of course, your society will collapse around you. So, you know, hopefully we get it together over at TTS. I think we can. Last summer we had a sense of urgency about the H1N1 situation. We were focused. We were still relaxed. We were still taking breaks, still hanging out and chatting. But we're really proud of actually getting out, you know, flyers and DVDs, warning people about the risks of the H1N1 and other vaccines, showing people where to get exemption forms. And we had a really successful and enjoyable time doing that. Now we need to get back to that type of work ethic as activists in this date and time. And so my colleague Brad and I, we flyered the hell out of Yonge Street yesterday. We were postering, slapping things up. We found about 100 Marxism 2010 posters here near Ryerson University. And so, you know, we're in the game, folks, and I know that your shiny full-colored posters are not something that, you know, that are from the people. They are certainly something that are being funded by a bigger agenda. So we covered them. We covered a bunch of them, and we'll compete against the Marxists for Canada. What did you do when the communists came for Canada? Well, you have to figure that out, because they are selling socialism, communism, Marxism, a million different flavors of it, because it's collectivism. They can get us all to agree to groupthink. They can get us all to agree to give up a bit of what we have, to pay more for what we need to use, and so on. And then at that point, they can control us the same way they've controlled other communist countries with a small elite. So there you go, folks. Now, a quick flip over to Infowars.com here with a whole bunch of little news here. The bailout of big banks has cost trillions more than we've been told by Washington's blog. And again, there's no doubt that the people who run the funny money system are destroying it. The question is, how seriously do we want to take that as it affects us more seriously? Unemployment in the U.S. is somewhere between 12 and 17%, you know, close to 20% by some estimates. Unemployment in Canada is at least 10%, and it's climbing. So instead of just accepting this as sort of a natural process of using this fraudulent economic process to dictate commerce and trade in this country and around the world, let's focus a bit more on what we can do to subvert the aims of this. If a giant Ponzi derivative scheme run by Goldman Sachs and the largest financial firms in the world is you know, destroying the value of the funny money they gave us, it doesn't mean we don't have anything. It doesn't mean we don't have people, technology, resources, and everything we need to avert the physical effects of a new Great Depression. People dying, people starving, massive increases in crime, road warrior style scenarios, as predicted by Gerald Celente from the Trends Research Institute. Also on Infowars, Hispanic anger should be focused at globalists. That's right, trying to avoid the race war here. They are trying to stir up racial divisions. The Obama presidency has not quelled racial divisions. It's only intensified them, and that was by design. Again, they lie. The mass media lies. The corporate media spent 2 years selling Obama, all of them, even Fox. Everybody sold Obama, and all these big corporations do it, and then the people buy it, and they wonder. They sold the Iraq War too, folks. These people don't sell us anything good, at least not hard. Obama administration, Goldman Sachs from top to bottom, talking about how the Goldman people are in there and the reason why he's not really going at the banks, although he does talk really pretty once in a while. And a message from Argentina, our sympathies to the people of Greece, by Adrian Salbucci. Make no mistake, this is a global model. That's right, folks. The Greek riots are a global model. I was going to play a clip of Talib Kweli dismissing Illuminati theories because he looked into them years ago and says people believe anything. More nonsense. I'm afraid, and we are listening to the Reflection Eternal instrumentals from a classic album by Talib Kweli in High Tech. But I am afraid, now we'll break this down more on tomorrow's show, that those folks may not be working for us anymore. On the cover of the Star.com, bloody fighting continues, death toll rises in Thailand. People are taken to the streets violently. At 3 o'clock this afternoon, my colleague Brad and I are going to take the streets peacefully and poster some what are you going to do before the G20 posters. But on that note, the People's DJ David James is coming up next with 4 hours of brilliant jazz. to get you in the mood, to get inspired and wired. And hopefully you don't just use the inspiration you get out there for entertainment. Hopefully use it to get something accomplished as well for yourself and for others. Before I go, again, a few websites. Infowars.com, great to check out. Naturalnews.com for great health news. You can pass it on to anybody. Everybody will love you for Naturalnews.com. Infowars might scare a couple people with Natural News. Nobody can knock the hustle because everybody cares about health. TrendsResearch.com for wealth. Definitely check out the predictions for the rest of 2010. Not looking good, but, you know, we're looking like we got a good shot at doing something. So if we do it, then it might be looking better. Locally, TorontoTruthSeekers.com, PressForTruth.ca, ConspiracyCulture.com, the Toronto Street News, great paper out there. Do check them out. Do flip a homeless guy a toonie. Get some good karma and get some good info. On that note, I think I'm going to leave you again with this mix of the track called You Will Let Go of My Mind. The track is again by the producer PFM. But my vocals are being laced and mixed. I'm having a little trouble with latency, but I'll get to that. Have a great day, folks. And don't worry, it's fantastic. We have a great city. We have a great country. Let's see if we can make it even better. Peace out. Thank you.